Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Join us for a journey as we go back to the great civilizations of the past. Who were the people? What were they like? How did they begin and how did they end? Let's find out on episode 33, Semiramis, Queen of the Universe. Previously on The Fan of History, Shamshi Adad V won the civil war in Assyria after paying dearly for Babylonian support. Well, Dan, we know what happens when you try to cash in old favors and you just don't have the clout that you used to. What are we going to find out this week?
Well, before we're going to find out anything, I have to mention that we do have some reviews. I've been asking you for reviews on iTunes, and I'm still asking for that, because iTunes reviews are great, so go to iTunes and review us. But we got reviews on Stitcher.
Stitcher?
Yeah, Stitcher is another podcast service. I think they just download stuff from iTunes and put it up.
Yeah.
And we're there, and we have like over 100 subscribers on this service that we have not been providing ourselves.
Wow.
But that's great.
That is great.
And we have 2 5-star reviews.
The what? First
is from, yeah, the first is from Nathan88, who says, great show about the little known period in history before the Romans and the Greeks.
All right. Thanks, Nate88.
And then we have Bubba Hotep, who says, informative and amusing. Their enthusiasm makes the content have more impact. Yay!
All right. That's fantastic.
So if you feel like you don't want to review us on iTunes, you can always do it on Stitcher, apparently. Okay, back to this time period. We have... we are trying to do a chronological narrative here, and we are in the year 814 BC, with Shamshi Adad V as the king of the Neo-Assyrian Empire.
Mm-hmm.
Assyria, the strongest state in the Near East, and we're trying to recover from this civil war. Shamshi Adad V is the fifth king of the empire, and all the vassal states who have been paying tribute, they stopped doing that during the civil war, and now they have to be brought back into the fold.
Need to be shown what they should be doing.
Yes, they have to get a bit of a good old Ashurnasirpal beating to get back in line. Shamshi Adad V has a wife that this episode is about, pretty much. She is known as Semiramis, and we'll talk more about her later. Babylon has king, Marduk-Balasu-Ipki. They have these names, they are amazing. Marduk Balasinti is quite old, probably, at this point. Because we have a record of him being a witness to a legal document 25 years before he ascended the throne.
Wow.
There are a lot of hereditary noble positions in Babylon, weakening royal authority. And this guy is then the brother of Semiramis, so he's the brother-in-law of the Assyrian king. That should be good for a peaceful relationship between the two Mesopotamian powers.
Yeah.
Right.
Are you sure about that?
Yeah, it worked for a while, didn't
okay.
it?
Okay, yeah, I guess so.
Back in the days of Shalmaneser and Ashurnasirpal. There is also a son. Shamshaddad V has a son with Semiramis, who is called Adad-nirari. This is an old king's name in Syria. So Semiramis, whose real name is Shamumarat, she is then the daughter of the Babylonian king, the daughter of the last Babylonian king, Maru-Sakishumi.
Mm-hmm.
And now we have to talk about Semiramis, because this is a name that comes down to us everywhere. So why is this woman so important? After the Assyrian Empire ends in 612 BC, everything, the lore, the knowledge of the Assyrian Empire evaporates so quickly, and it never really reaches the Roman and Greek world.
Okay.
So Ashurbanipal, who we will spend many an episode on, he is the only Assyrian king, really, that the Greeks know by name. So they don't know what has happened, really. So they invent stuff. They make history by making stuff up. And they hear this name, Semiramis, and they attribute most things to her. But we will talk about wow. all the things that this queen is supposed to have done.
So they come up with these crazy things that have happened in this storied empire. And they're like, who did it? Semiramis. Why not?
Yes, and then they come up with a lot of things that never happened as well. And they attribute those to her as well.
Wow.
So we are now going into legendary material. I try to avoid legendary material, but this was just too good to avoid. There's even an Assyrian kings list that is entirely wrong. And before the archaeologist stuff of the 19th century, we thought that this was the true Assyrian kings list. So she has an imaginary husband and imaginary sons, and wow. they are all on this kings list.
Who made the king's list?
Someone later than the fall of the empire.
Wow, okay.
Because they have this enormous king's list, but sure. that one didn't spread. The false one spread. Have you heard of the Darius inscription at Beshitun? The one that led to the translation of Mesopotamian, of Sumeric?
I've heard of that city, so this has got to be in what it was in reference to.
It's an enormous inscription in three languages that English archaeologists were climbing to in secret in the 19th century and trying to understand the Persian language.
Gotcha.
And the other languages there. So this was, of course, made by Semiramis. It's been there since the days of Darius, I mean.
Darius, okay.
So, and people thought, oh, of course, that was Semiramis who wrote that. So, here is the legendary story of Queen Semiramis. She married this King Ninus of Assyria, who was not Shamshaddad V then. And she was the mother of Ninjas, the king of Assyria, who was not Adad-nirari III. When her son died, this ninja's character, she pretended to be him and ruled Assyria for 42 years.
between the years of 2140 to 2072 BC.
That's amazing.
She heard that Armenia, which was definitely not around in the year 2000 BC,
right?
They had a beautiful king called Ara the Beautiful. She invaded Armenia and raped the guy.
Wow.
And while she was there, she founded Urartu and built the city of Van.
She is a time traveler. This is astounding.
This legend might come from the invasion of Shalmaneser III, because I could see how Shalmaneser could be mutated into Semiramis.
Okay. Some similar letters and vowel sounds.
I wonder what made her make all these decisions, but then, at some point, she invented the chastity belt.
Why?
That's a good question. But she also invented castration.
Oh boy.
She somehow was a goddess. Same. Yeah, because she was the daughter of the fish goddess Derketo of Ascalon.
Time-traveling fish goddess. I love it.
Yes, and if you read The Divine Comedy by Dante, this amazing work of the medieval period,
yes,
you can find Semiramis. She is in the second circle of hell.
Amazing.
And then, of course, if you write fiction, even today, and you need a mysterious Eastern queen, just name her Semiramis, because that's what people do.
You may as well. Everybody else has attributed everything to her.
And this name, Semiramis, or Shamuramat, is still a name for female children in Assyria today.
Really?
The Romans have a pretty unclear boundary between Semiramis and Isis, the goddess.
Right, okay.
I read some point where Julius Caesar references Semiramis. I think it is in the context of that he's saying that women can actually do great things. Just look at Semiramis.
Well, maybe it did some good. All these crazy stories.
Yeah, she's not done yet.
Even more.
After she then pretended to be her son and ruled Assyria.
Sure.
She conquered all of Egypt.
Conquered Egypt.
Yes.
Amazing.
And that probably references the great invasion of Esarhaddon that we will talk about later.
Oh.
Somehow she found the time to found the city of Babylon.
Wow. Okay.
And then she decided to invade India. But the people in India had elephants, so she had to make elephants. So she invaded India with fake elephants.
She just so... They
and
just
it worked.
Built them?
Yes.
Robot elephants. Okay.
Maybe they were just scary, so the real elephants ran away or something.
It's time-traveling fish goddess who makes robo-elephants. It's beautiful.
So this makes you wonder, who was the real woman? Shamuramat, gave reasons for people to make these legends. And there is a very common fact cited about the wife of Shamshi-Adad V, that she ruled Assyria after his death during the minority of her son. And you can find this everywhere when you read about the Assyrian Empire, and that this was the reason why she created such legends. She was actually a woman that ruled the Assyrian Empire.
Okay.
But it's wrong. No
really?
Woman ever did, because her son was not in his minority, and he picked up the rule immediately. It's the current idea, at least. So this has been. I'm sure there are people that still think that she did rule, but she is an exceptional, powerful Assyrian woman because she puts up steles by herself.
Wow.
In the city of Asshur, in the very heart of the Assyrian Empire. And she's also confirmed in other materials. She must have been quite influential. And this daily is what the language is, of course, very, very bombastic. So if you read it, you might get the impression that she rules the empire.
Gotcha.
But the Assyrians are, they are a bit better than other people when it comes to treating women, but they are, this is the ancient world. People are pretty bad at treating women.
Right.
And if you want to be a woman in the 9th century BC, you should be it in Sparta. And that's what we are going to talk about in our upcoming episodes. But Sparta is definitely the best place to be a woman in the ancient world. We'll dedicate a whole episode to being a woman in Sparta very soon. I think in 3 episodes.
Oh, wow. Sounds cool.
So Cambridge Ancient History summarizes the real woman, Shemuramat, saying that she is a woman with presence, an aura, an almost superhuman quality to make this kind of impression on history. So what do the Assyrians really do in the year 814 BC? Well, Shamshadad gets takes out his anger immediately. The first thing he does in 814 BC is to invade Babylonia.
All right.
So he hasn't forgotten the harsh terms, and he doesn't want a new treaty. He just wants to beat Babylonia up because of what they did to him.
Sure. Who wouldn't?
He invades in the east, that is close to the mountains of Iran. And he captures several minor cities. Okay. And the poor Babylonian king, who didn't know that his brother-in-law would do this, he forms an alliance to fight the Assyrians. And he gets the Babylonian people themselves, the Chaldeans,
sure,
and the Kassites of Namri, the Arameans, and then Elam.
Elam,
Elam comes out of the woodwork.
I was going to say, it's been forever since we talked about them.
Yeah, episode 3, I think.
Oh my gosh.
This is a very ancient kingdom, probably older than both Babylonia and Assyria, that is located in southern Iran. And they have now decided to act and stop Assyria.
They're not going to take their crap anymore.
There are actually claims that Elam is the most ancient kingdom, that it's older than Egypt.
Wow.
And it might have been the oldest civilization in the world, but this is hotly contested.
Oh, title. My goodness.
There is a unique language in Elam, so it isn't related to anything else, which makes study of Elam very difficult. And yeah, very little is known of this Neo-Elamite I period, that's 1100 to 770 BC. Because in 770 BC, the Assyrians will make sure that we know more about Elam by being violent to Elam. At some points, Elam was matriarchal, that it was ruled by women.
Okay.
And from this very point in history, Elam will be a constant ally for anyone who wants to fight Assyria. And it's a bit unclear to me why Elam hates Assyria so much. But they probably see the growing power of this empire and they decided to stop it early. Because Elam has their own problems. They are threatened by mountain tribes in the north, that is straight to the east from Assyria. Such famous mountain tribes as the Medes and the Persians.
I was about to say, these mountain tribes seem to be afflicting lots of great nations.
Yes. And there's a very delicate balance of power in Iran, in the borderland between the mountains and the southern plains.
Mm-hmm.
So if you do something drastic to Elam, these mountain tribes are then unchecked. So here we can find one of the very core reasons for the fall of the Assyrian Empire. So you can't kill off Elam without addressing this question, which is exactly what will happen in the 7th century. But now Assyria faces these allies at the Battle of Dur-Papsukai in 840 BC.
I'm glad you have to say these words.
Haven't you heard of the Battle of Dur-Papsukai?
Dur-Papsukai?
Yeah, it was a glorious battle, and if you ask Shamshi Adad the V what happened, it was an amazing victory for the Assyrians.
Oh.
But all battles are.
Of course they are. Every battle that gets written down is amazing for Assyria. I've learned yes. that lesson.
Yeah, if it's really bad, you'd never hear of
mm-hmm.
it. But the guess from historians is that this was a draw. Because Marduk Balassi Ipki remains the king of Babylonia and the Assyrians go back to Assyria.
But it was the greatest draw ever.
Yeah, for Assyria. In 813 BC, this is also evidence that it was a draw, because next year, Shamshi Adad is back. He invades Babylonia again.
Let's try it a second time.
Yeah, you know when you have a group of friends and you have done something successfully and you want to repeat it. Well, you had this great night out.
Sure.
You want to do exactly the same thing. What happens?
Yeah, we go to the same bar. We get the same drinks. We talk to those same girls. Yeah, it was a glorious night, Dan.
Yeah, and when we try to do it again, somebody has something else in his calendar. Yeah, the bar isn't as great. The girls right. aren't there.
Exactly.
So when the allies try to assemble to fight Assyria again, they can't get it together in time. So Shamshi Adad managed to besiege the city of Deir, trapping the Babylonian king inside. So Marduk Balassi Ipki is besieged in the city of Deir in Babylon. And the allies don't get there in time, so the Assyrians invade the city. They're good at siegecraft. They take there and capture the king. And he suffers that most... The Assyrians have many horrible fates for their enemies, but this one is kind of my favorite. The king is deported to Assyria.
Huh, okay.
And when the Assyrian says that, you never hear of them again. Everybody who is deported...
Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues, your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Hey, Dave.
Yeah, Randy.
Since we founded Bombas, we've always said our socks, underwear, and T-shirts are super soft. Any new ideas?
Maybe sublimely soft.
Or disgustingly cozy.
Wait, what?
I got it. Bombas. Absurdly comfortable essentials for yourself.
And for those facing homelessness.
Because one purchased equals one donated.
Wow, did we just write an ad?
Yes.
Bombas, big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase.
Deported to Assyria, it just disappears.
It's just gone.
Yeah, so I imagine there's like a tower where they live and they have a really nice time. I don't know.
Yeah, it's just, you would wonder... Like, would they just kill them? Would they go to the trouble to deport them just to kill them?
I think they usually kill the people they want to kill immediately.
Right.
But this is a very common fate, to be deported to Assyria and never be heard of again.
I wonder if they just have them in some kind of grand hotel.
I have no idea. Maybe they have like a council of advisors of captured kings.
Wouldn't that be interesting? You actually keep them alive and have them as your council.
There are. The Persians did that. So the Persians did take most of their things from the Assyrians.
Wow. Maybe that's what it is. There's some hidden oasis that just keep them there. If you never leave, you can live. Okay.
And after this actual victory in 813 BC, Shamshadad V returns to Assyria.
Okay.
It's the age-old question, then. What do you do with Babylon and Babylonia when you're the Assyrian king? And he's done. He has had his revenge. And this his brother-in-law is now his prisoner. But the Babylonians then have to face an interesting question. Then who wants to be the king in Babylon?
Right.
The guy who steps up is Babu Aha Idina. This name means Bao. Bao has given me a brother. This is traditionally the name of a second son. So it might be his brother, but I don't think it is. And next year, then, in 812 BC, this news reaches Assyria. So Shamshadad is like, wow, is there a new king in Babylon? I have to invade again. He invades. He captures Baba Aha Idina, and right. He is deported to Assyria.
Wow.
Here also Shamshadad is extra angry, so he despoils the city of Deir, Lakiru, and Gananati by taking their gods. These were physical statues in the temples. Right. To Assyria. The gods are deported to Assyria.
Wow.
But they are heard of again. If you're a god and get deported to Assyria, there is a chance that you will make.
Right. You could survive.
And then Shamshadad does a little tour of Babylonia. He makes sacrifices at Kutha, at Babylon itself, and in Borsippa, the city of truth and justice. And now Babylonia is utterly defeated by Shamshadad. And you'd think that now he's really had his revenge.
Right.
The Chaldeans retreat to the sea land in the south, to their own kingdoms, the Kassites as well. The Arameans disappears into the fields, and Elam retreats into Elam. So you think the situation was over. Two Babylonian kings have now been deported to Assyria. But in the year 811 BC, Shamshadad invades Babylonia again.
Why on earth?
And here something must be really wrong.
Okay.
Why is he doing this?
Yeah.
He has all these other problems. Urartu is still around and still growing more powerful. The Manians are to the east. All of Syria. He has to deal with all the stuff, but he doesn't. He invades a leaderless Babylonia. And no one even tries to be the king of Babylonia in 811 BC. There is no one. No one will take the job.
Yeah, who would?
Because they know they will be deported to Assyria. And without a real fight, then, Shamshadad claims to be the king of Sumer and Akkad. And that is the traditional title for someone who is king of all of Mesopotamia. Okay. But he doesn't really do anything to make the... He doesn't take care of Babylonia like the king of Babylon should, like Tiglath-Pileser did. Tiglath-Pileser was the king of Babylon and did all the duties that the king of Babylon had to do. But Shamshadad V, he just goes back after the Chaldeans has paid him heavy tribute to not get him into the marches of the south. And after this, Babylon declines into state of anarchy that is really bad for Babylonia. And this could very well be the end of Babylonia's unit.
Right.
But it somehow survives. But this is super bad times for Babylon. At the end of the year, or later in the year, Shamshadad V dies. And I don't think he's very old at this point. So he spent his entire kingship almost being just vengeful against Babylonia for this deal he was forced into at the end of the civil war. And this not only almost destroys Babylonia, but it leads to enormous problems for Assyria that he didn't deal with the problems that he should have dealt with. So Assyria is now going into decline as well. And now we need a strong king. We need a Shalmaneser or an Ashurnasirpal to save Assyria. The empire is almost 100 years old at this point. Man, but that fact was probably not important to the Assyrians at all, because they didn't count in decimals or in this 10 system that we have.
What were they? Were they base 12?
I think they're base 60, but here I am on very very loose ground. So, but I think they are. I think that, like the Babylonians, that this is the reason why there are 60 minutes to an hour.
I gotcha. Still.
So his king, his son, becomes the king of Assyria in 811 BC as Adad-nirari III. And this is quite a complex person, because we have now entered a long, long period of decline for the Assyrian Empire. And this guy has a lot of positive qualities. So he might have been very important to save the empire or not. I mean, it's very, very hard to judge his kingship. But he will put in work to stop outside dangers. He just will not be very successful. Or he will be somewhat successful. He's, as I said, hard to judge. But he's not successful on the domestic arena. The inside dangers of the empire is what will become much worse during Adad-nirari III's rule. But he is the king of Assyria for 28 years. And the kingdom was never ruled by his mother than Semiramis.
Contrary to popular fantastical belief.
Yes, he's the sixth king of the Neo-Assyrian Empire. And there is a movement for the cult of the god Nabu. And the god Nabu is becoming really important all over Assyria. And this, I still can't get my head around exactly how the Assyrian religion works. Because they should all worship Ashur and other gods as aspects of Ashur, but they're going very Babylonian in their religious practices.
What is Nabu? What's Nabu's big deal?
I think he is the scribe of the gods. We'll talk much more about him later when his influence has become even greater.
Okay.
So let's look at the situation in the west. In Kar Shalmaneser, the old city Tilbarsit that Shalmaneser III took, he built this city named after himself, which was in reality an enormous fortress. And that is the base for Assyrian control of the west. But the Euphrates is the border of effective Assyrian control. And most of the Western kingdoms has not paid their tribute. And they haven't seen a royal Assyrian army in 16 years at this point. And the two most powerful states of the West, they are Israel and Damascus.
Mm-hmm.
And what does Israel and Damascus do if there are no Assyrians?
Fight each other?
Yes. So in 810 BC... Aram Damascus and Israel fights again, and it's Hazael versus Jehu. We talked about both of them before.
Right.
Hazael is ruling Aram Damascus until 796 BC. And at some point during this decade, Jehu dies and his son Jehoahaz becomes the king of Israel. So Jehoahaz has been archaeologically confirmed. There are there's a stamp seal that's been found that says belonging to Jehoahaz, son of the king. He is initially a Yahweh worshipper.
Okay.
But he is allowing... This religious history of the Jews is so complicated, because it's all written down in Babylon in the 6th century BC, and then they try to make it more monotheistic during this period. But what they are saying then is that Jehoahaz was a good Javi worshipper, but he allowed some other stuff to go on.
Okay.
For example, cult poles of Asherah. So Asherah is the mother goddess of the Semitic pantheon. She shows up in Ugarit and in Egypt. She is. She has these poles that you put up to worship her. And you can find them all around Israel from this period. So archaeology shows us that polytheism was much more common in Israel than the Bible says at this time.
Hmm. What did the poles represent? I mean, was it some kind of just that's basically her flag or symbol?
I'm not sure. I get the idea that it's something dirty, but I'm not sure about that. There's
plenty of guys that worship establishments with poles in them, but it's not that kind of show.
And it appears that some people try to consolidate this into that Asherah was the wife of Yahweh. But that's heretic to the Jews, right?
Oh, yeah.
But you can find the household shrines to Asherah up until the 6th century BC in Israel. Okay, we have a new king in Assyria.
Yay, a new king.
What does a new king have to do in Assyria?
You gotta go beat people up.
Yes. And with all I've said in this episode, Adad-Nirari III chooses to attack Babylonia.
Oh my gosh. Why would you do this?
I have no idea. Maybe he promised his father, like his father's deathbed request was, I'm not done yet. We have to invade Babylonia. But father, there is nothing left of Babylonia. But invade Babylonia.
Yeah.
Obey your father.
Yeah. Son, go beat them up one last time. Dad, but no.
Can I not, Dad? Go beat them up. But there is an important difference from his father's invasion. Adad-Nirari III has some sort of plan how to handle Babylonia. So he invades. Of course, there is no king in Babylon. He wins easily.
Right.
He captures Babylonian troops and put them in the Assyrian army. He captures more gods. He makes the proper sacrifices to the gods that are still in Babylonia. And then he returns deported civilians because Shamshadad V had deported some Babylonians to other parts of the Assyrian Empire.
Okay.
They are sent back to Babylon. They receive food from the Assyrians.
Hmm.
And it seems that Adad-Nirari hangs around in Babylon for a time, actually doing the duties of the Babylonian king.
So he's actually trying to reestablish it?
Yes, and this, maybe he is under, indeed, heavy influence of his mother, Semiramis, who was a Babylonian princess, perhaps.
Right.
And if she was, he is then the grandson of the last good Babylonian king, Marduk-Sakishumi. But we have another problem now. The Assyrian records are getting much worse from the glorious days of Shalmaneser. So now we get big holes in our information.
Hmm.
But this seems to be the situation. He sticks around in Babylon for a while, does the duties of the king, but he doesn't save Babylon from the decline it's suffering, but he tries to at least.
Right.
And then in 810 BC, Ishpuini of Urartu dies. And his son Minua was already the co-regent. We talked about these guys before.
Mm-hmm.
So Minua is now the only king of Urartu, right to the north of the Assyrian Empire. Almost an empire in itself. So
that's interesting. We keep talking over each other.
Sorry.
So what's going on next?
Yeah, maybe we need to talk about Europe.
We haven't been over in Europe in quite some time.
No, and that's because nothing is going on, but now stuff will start to happen in Europe. In Italy, there are the Villanovans, who will become the Etruscans. We have the two important cities on the Isle of Euboea. Chalcis and Lefkandi, or Old Eritrea, are the two most powerful city-states in Greece. There are some other important early city-states, or big villages, more likely, in Greece. Sparta, Knossos, Athens, Miletus, and Argos. And in 810 BC, something happens in Laconia, the area where Sparta is located. It has come down to us as the Eunomia, which I think is a great name. It's the end of disorder.
That's what it means?
Yes.
Huh. Okay.
I think that's meaning. That's what it represents, at least. So the chaos of the Dorian invasion that has lasted for 400 years comes to an end in Laconia. And here, somewhere, a guy called Lycurgus steps up and founds the city of Sparta as we know it. And he puts down the rules. He's the lawgiver of Sparta. And of course, this is a very legendary character, and we don't know if he was a real person or not.
Oh, but okay.
This is what we'll talk about in the next episode, because with the Eunomia, we can introduce the super conservative city-state of Sparta that it basically remains the same state for 500 years from this point on.
So wow.
We will do 3 videos on Sparta. The legends of Sparta, covering this origin of Sparta and these laws of Lycurgus. And then we'll talk about life in Sparta, about what it's like to be a man in this fantastic warlike state. And then we'll do an episode about women in Sparta, where we will also discuss Spartan sexuality, which is a subject where people have many ideas that are entirely wrong. This will also be a great introduction of Sparta, because they will enter our main narrative in the First Messenian War, which will happen in the 8th century BC. And I will make the case that the Spartans are individually the best fighters in the whole world at this point. Almost from the start.
Really?
Yeah, but they are not that many, so they couldn't beat Assyria. And the Assyrians are not the Persians. They're not this disorganized rabble of an enormous army. The Spartans fight it in classic times.
All right.
And a bit later in our show, we will see what happens when Assyrians fight Greeks, but those Greeks are not Spartans. And that's it for this episode.
All right. Well, let's see. So what is going on in our next episode? What are we going to do there?
Legends of Sparta.
Legends of Sparta. That's right. Okay, folks, please go to our YouTube. It is YouTube/fanofhistory. Also, subscribe, like, and share. Give us a review on iTunes or Stitcher if you can find us out there. We would love to hear from you. We'll read it on the air, just like we did these. And we want to also direct you to Twitter @TheFanOfHistory. TheFanOfHistory.wordpress.com is a good website. Also, don't forget about the Patreon, patreon.com/FanOfHistory. So, for this week, I am Brennan.
And I'm Dan.
And this has been The Fan of History.
If you enjoyed this podcast, please consider supporting us on Patreon, patreon.com/fanofhistory. Just $1 an episode would help us out. Thanks, and see you next time.
Hi, this is Craig Robinson from Ways to Win, and support for this podcast comes from Invesco QQQ, the official ETF of the NCAA. The future isn't scary, not realizing its potential, however, could be. Just like on the recruiting trail, I've seen potential come in many forms as a coach. Learn more at Invesco.com/QQQ. Let's rethink possibility. Invesco Distributors, Inc.
Flexibility is great. That's why there's yoga. Flexibility for your insurance coverage is great too. That's why there's United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, United Healthcare Insurance Plans offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. One of these plans may be right for you if you're, say, between jobs, coming off your parents' plan, turning a side hustle into a full hustle, or even missed open enrollment. Want more flexibility? Find out more about United Healthcare Insurance Plans at uh1.com.
When you make decisions for your company, you look for the no-brainers. And if you have a lot of mailing to do, Stamps.com is the ultimate no-brainer. It streamlines your processes to make your business more efficient, which makes you less busy. Mail checks, invoices, legal documents, and everything you need to keep your business running with Stamps.com. Seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. Schedule package pickups and see your cheapest and fastest shipping options from different carriers. With rates up to 89% off USPS and UPS rates. And with the Stamps.com mobile app, you can take care of mailing and shipping wherever you are. Make the same no-brainer decision as over 1 million other businesses with Stamps.com. Sign up with code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's Stamps.com. Code PROGRAM.